podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. Normal psychological treatment tends to emphasize the talking aspect within therapy, developing insight, making the unconscious conscious, developing awareness, developing more ways to control maybe our thoughts or our feelings, and develop coping strategies along the way. But what about those times when, as therapists, we find ourselves working with a patient that seems to be stuck in their treatment process due to a trauma experienced, maybe at some point in their lives? We know that at its best, talk therapy, regardless of the theoretical approach being utilized, is typically limited in helping folks fully process through and let go of a trauma. In fact, we know that talk therapy alone can unintentionally increase the arousal around the trauma being discussed and keep a patient from getting a needed distance and resolution around their trauma. But what if there's an approach we could utilize to help patients accelerate the information processing of their traumatic event and develop a more truth-based assessment and understanding of the event and of themselves? Well, I'm excited to have Wendy Bird with us today to talk about such an approach. Wendy specializes in working with trauma with the incorporation of EMDR woven into the therapeutic process. Wendy is a licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist. She has over 15 years experience working with adults, children, couples, and families. She is a certified EMDR therapist, an approved consultant, and an EMDR basic training facilitator, and has used EMDR since 2008. She is also the president of the board of directors for EMDR International Association, EMDARIA. EMDARIA is a nonprofit comprised of more than 10,000 mental health practitioners who practice EMDR therapy. She uses a variety of treatment modalities in conjunction with EMDR, including CBT, interpersonal neurobiology, mindfulness, and attachment theory. And currently, Wendy works as a private practitioner out of her office in Austin, Texas. Wendy, it's so nice to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Really nice to have you. Hey, as we get into this, tell us what got you into the field. In particular, what drew you to working with trauma?
Well, I wanted to be a veterinarian.
So did I.
Really?
That's the funniest thing, yeah.
Yes. And I loved biology. So I started at UT as an undergrad in microbiology. And I felt like it just wasn't my people.
Yeah.
So I liked the biology aspect, but then I thought this isn't where I'm supposed to be. So I changed my major over to psychology and sociology, and that's what I got my undergrad degree in. And right out of college, you know, it's a weird degree to kind of look for work in the field at that level. But I was lucky enough to land a position at a treatment center here in Austin for abused and neglected girls. And so I went straight into the field working with trauma.
Right in the gate. Yep.
Yeah. Many of them were pulled out of their home for abuse and things like that. And so it was a wild ride, but so fulfilling. And so interestingly enough, one of my mentors that was there, I thought she was just an incredibly skilled clinician. She had trained in EMDR. Her mentor was kind of one of the early adapters of EMDR. Uh-huh. And so I kind of got to watch how the kiddos there responded to the therapy and just learned a lot about trauma. So I've kind of been hooked since the very early.
You're coming right out of the gate, right into
it. That's right.
I love it. That's terrific. Hey, as we focus on EMDR today, eye movement, desensitization reprocessing, give us a general understanding of EMDR as a treatment approach, would you?
Yeah. So the theory kind of goes something like, past experiences have a profound effect on our current behaviors, thoughts, feelings, how we respond and react, and that they're really a driving force in the challenges that we face in our day-to-day world. And the research has kind of started backing that up, you know, at the early days it was just written down. So when someone comes in for EMDR therapy, the first thing that we do is we kind of ask them what's going on. And then we take a very thorough history to start looking for what are the past experiences that are contributing to what this person is struggling with.
Yeah.
And I kind of think about it as our roadmap. And then we target those memories, past, present, and even future kinds of experiences. And we allow the brain to kind of grab that information, to chew it up, digest it, reprocess it, and desensitize it, and store it in a more adaptive way.
Really good. Really good. I love that idea. And to kind of normalize that trauma is real. These things that we hold are real. It's not like, you know, hey, just get over it, or, you know, stop focusing on it. The idea is, if I could, I would, but I can't. Exactly. If these events, like you're saying, are so significant, I'd like to kind of just keep a general definition of trauma. It's an event outside the realm of normal experience. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a big, you know, big T trauma, like Shapiro said, or a little T trauma, you know, not to lessen or minimize the distress, but they're different kinds of traumas. But the idea that these traumas are real, they leave an impression, an indelible mark, as we think they could. But the EMDR, as you're saying, begins to kind of work through these approaches, and the EMDR being so well researched. In fact, it's the most researched and published case, you know, set of reports around the efficacy of this treatment. So really, really good. I'm mentioning there the idea of what constitutes a trauma. What are some of the life events that you see and you know as you work with trauma that constitute, these are life events that can leave one in a traumatized state?
You know, I think my definition of what a trauma is probably pretty different than what your normal person walking down the sidewalk and that you, well, because any experience that kind of overwhelms our system can be identified as a trauma. You know, I think about clients that I've worked with, I work with kiddos. You wouldn't think so, but I have literally seen Aladdin be a trauma because the scene just overwhelmed the child's body. And, you know, 10 years later, they're still afraid to go upstairs. So would most people identify that as a trauma? Maybe not. But once you sort of start to understand that it's really just a biological mechanism, then many, many things can be a trauma, from the things that we think of as traumas, but then these subtle little experiences that just left their mark on our nervous system.
I really appreciate that definition, because it takes away someone having to prove or justify or convince somebody, no, that was really traumatic. Yeah, but it was a movie.
Yeah.
I had a young man that I worked with who was at a sleepover, and he realized 11 o'clock, he was young, 7, 8, but they were family people around him, but he recognized that he was alone and he felt like he wasn't going to be okay. Okay, so he got a little homesick and he's woken up. But that became a cornerstone for the rest of his life, that if I'm alone, I'm not going to be okay. Kind of like the Aladdin idea. I can't go back upstairs.
Yeah.
So saying that there's something that overstimulates a system is really kind of a non-judgmental way, isn't it? To name that these things are real for me.
Yes, exactly. And it allows people to just tell their story, because they kind of know that there's these little pieces back there, but to have it validated, like you said, of, oh, that's a big one. That's one of the earlier times that probably laid the foundation for the struggles that's happening today.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The idea that, you know, those may be more subtle or nuanced events that, you know, are different than what we might say, like Shapiro says, you know, the big T and little T traumas. Again, not to minimize the distress or the disturbance one feels, but we get to differentiate the different types of experience. You know, the big T traumas are the wars or the assaults or, you know, physical or sexual abuse incidents and disasters that leaves one with those PTSD symptoms, or the little T traumas. You know, those are typically more understood within the context of interpersonal relationships, whether it's, say, childhood and authority figures, caregivers, et cetera, that it kind of goes sideways for them. And they walk away with a set of beliefs about themselves and others that can really set a really negative path for the rest of their lives. But the way you're describing it, I think, kind of captures it and complements the other ways that we think about trauma too.
Yeah, that's right. We can broaden our definition.
Yeah.
And yeah. Really capture all of it, because both of those life experiences have major impacts. How well we're going to be, how resilient we're going to become.
Yeah. I guess I kind of want to go one more lap around this, because you're describing it, it invites a conversation around one's life. Say, go back over that just one more time for me, because I think that's an important piece for our listeners to understand as well.
Yeah. Well, just thinking about any situation that overwhelms your nervous system can be a trauma. then we are allowed to tell our story.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, as we're talking about going back over someone's life and their experiences, their interactions, how do traumatic events get processed differently than our other experiences and our memories?
Well, I think if you think about how adaptive we have to be as humans to sort of survive in a pretty dangerous world, the brain's doing what I think the brain should be doing. It's going, hey, something bad happened. Pay attention, store that, and let's make sure that that memory doesn't change easily. I don't want you to forget it. So, you know, if you're out hunting and you recognize that tigers live behind bushes, pay attention to bushes and don't forget it. It's really important because if you just kind of haphazardly wander around, you might get eaten.
So it's actually adaptive, isn't it? For the trauma to be held at some level. It's actually a kind of a survival strategy.
Exactly. The problem is that the brain doesn't let it go very easily. And we don't live in a world where we're constantly in danger. So we kind of need the brain to be able to distinguish danger from safety. If we have too many of those adversities, then the brain learns that there's just danger and holds on to it.
Yeah. And then therefore, these things that may once upon a time have been real, maybe there was a tiger behind someone's, you know, life or behind the door, and maybe those things did happen there and then, but in the here and now, that gets carried in an interruptive way.
That's exactly right. If you think about it, you know, you're not a little child anymore. Now you have choices, you have power, you can leave the situation. That kind of thinking is not available when the trauma is so present.
Yeah. As you're talking about it too, you're causing me to think, and I'd be curious about your thoughts on this, of you're intimating that having that fear is adaptive and having that kind of protective, cautious response is adaptive. But that way of taking care of yourself once upon a time might also be the very thing and ways of being, the response of self that was once adaptive now becomes so problematic, it hinders your growth and maybe interrupts and maybe even significantly damages relationships in your life and interactions in life now that could be otherwise corrective or positive. It becomes really problematic.
Right. Yeah, it does. It stops growth from happening and leaves you kind of stuck on the treadmill of old behaviors, old information. Yeah. So when we can get that information processed and hooked up to adaptive experiences, then we have a whole range of behaviors and emotions and beliefs that can open up that we can access that we would not have been able to access before.
I'm going to ask you about what therapy gets to look like after EMDR processing in just a minute, but I'm going to imagine what you just said right there are some of the things that we begin to access anew. So prior to that, though, I want to go backward just a little bit more. You're talking about how the brain kind of holds this. Explain what is going on at a neurological brain level with regard to trauma. What's occurring?
Well, we know that there are certain areas of the brain that are very kind of lit up, so to speak. The amygdala, for instance, is that kind of alert center. So there are parts of the brain that are overworking a bit when you have that kind of trauma. And we really want the brain to be able to be integrative, to work efficiently. An efficient brain is able to respond better.
It's really good. When you're walking around with a DEFCON 4 brain that's anticipating, like you talked about, you know, kind of your brain is activated. There's some really cool MRI studies done with someone's brain on trauma, if you will. And the brain is literally lit up, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And so after EMDR, we know that those brain centers calm down.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's very powerful.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
What's really interesting too, you know, when you share it that way, it goes back to, you know, messages people get that says, well, that was in the past, let it go, or it's really not that bad, come on. Or just, you know, change your thoughts and your feelings will, you know, will follow.
Yeah.
No, no, it doesn't. In fact, it is stuck in that very state that it was experienced in the first time around, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It's impossible to just let it go. The information is there. It's being activated constantly as you just walk through life.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a button that's going to be too easy to push. You're never going to avoid pushing it.
That's right.
I kind of think of EMDR as like, if you're paralyzed, you can have a wheelchair and that will get you places. But wouldn't it be much better if you knew how to repair the legs? And yeah. EMDR kind of repairs the legs.
It really does. Well, I'm gonna ask you a little bit about that right now. We know that EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing. We know that it's, you know, you can use eye movements. We know that you can use tapping. There's other modes with sound or kind of stimulation of one's hands holding a paddle. Basically, it's creating bilateral stimulation. What is happening, Wendy, within the brain that assists with the accelerated processing of these traumatic events?
Yeah, well, so we know that one of the things that we really need to be able to unlock those traumatic memories that are stored in that kind of resistant way to change is we need dual attention. So the bilateral stimulation creates what we call dual attention, meaning I can think about the past experience, but I'm also here very present and alert and active. You know, sometimes people compare EMDR to hypnosis, but they really are using two very different mechanisms in the brain. So the EMDR experience is a very alert and active experience. I think about it like there's ways that the brain stores information, right? You know, sensory, sight, sound, touch, smell, but we have thoughts, we have emotions, and we have body sensations. That's the kinds of information the brain takes in and stores and then makes sense out of.
Yes, exactly.
From there, I think the genius thing about EMDR is that it doesn't just go after one piece of the experience. It activates them all, and they're all stored in different ways in the brain. And so we go after all of them and we activate that memory. And then with the dual attention and the bilateral back and forth, it allows the brain to kind of engage its own system. This lives within us. And it usually works most of the time for our benefit to process an experience. It's when it doesn't, or there's been too many, or it's too very overwhelming, that mechanism doesn't kick in.
Yeah.
And so the information, like you said, is stored in the original way. And that's pretty intense.
It truly is. I love what you're saying too, that, you know, our humanistic colleagues will say that, you know, our body is teleological in its approach. It wants to heal. It wants to right itself.
Yeah.
But with the trauma in place, it keeps us off balance. It keeps us stuck, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. And I think that in some ways it's kind of genius because traumas are so easily triggered. It's like our warning system going, hey, here it is, go take care of it. You know, every time we're kind of walking around and we can feel that trigger, we go, oh, okay. I wonder what that's linked to. I wonder what that talks to in my history.
Yeah. I really like that. You know, what you're talking about too, and I'll often frame it this way with the people I'm working with. I'm saying, you know, you and I get to set up kind of the protocol to go into this, but really all you and I are doing is activating a natural self-healing process. And we get to bear witness to the brain beginning to kind of put these things in order. To work through, like you said, it's multimodal here. There's strong emotions, there's images, there's body sensory feelings, there's beliefs. And we get to watch the body begin to heal itself by doing the bilateral stimulation and bear witness to that healing process. It is beautiful, isn't it, to watch?
It's amazing to watch. I mean, I think it was one of the things that appealed to me most about EMDR when I was introduced to it that makes sense that the body would have something like that. It has its own mechanisms in
yes.
all the other ways. Why yeah. would the brain be different? It just fit into that's truth right there. But then I think it's so empowering for people to know that because they feel like there's no way to change it. And if you had this experience, you know, you're kind of stuck with it for life. And for them to experience that, no, your body has this wisdom and yeah. knows how to work on it. We just have to give it the ingredients.
Yeah, I really like that. Our body has the ability to heal in so many other ways, you know, a wound, a break, you know, cuts, whatever else it may be, to really heal. And here's another way that got discovered to heal through the traumas yep. that our body wants to do. Yeah, that's pretty good. When you go through the EMDR and you've helped someone work through their trauma and they get to be in the world in a different way now, the brain's not lit up, the MRIs will show that pre-post. Yeah. They get to be in the world in a very, very different way mm-hmm. than they've ever been. Kind of let alone did I know that I was going through the world with my brain lit up all the time. I knew I wasn't happy or these things were triggering, but I didn't appreciate it. What does therapy that you're doing, what does therapy get to look like after the EMDR processing a trauma?
Well, from the therapist standpoint, it's beautiful because you get to be on that journey with someone and see someone's growth. I kind of think about it like, I don't know what they're going to be like after, but I know it's going to be better than what we started with. You know, sometimes they're kind of speechless. Almost always about 4 sessions in and people, you know, after we've been processing, people will wait for it to go back.
Yes.
They go, I am feeling better, but I know it's going to go back. It's just, yes. I'm having a good week or two, you know,
right. All the stars are lining up.
Yes. Yes. And yeah. I just, you know, usually giggle and go, well, we'll see. Because yeah. I know there's not really a back, that those are the side effects of reprocessing those experiences back there.
I had a clinician I was working with EMDR, and he was saying, he said, Graham, there's been such a change just, I think, after 2. And he was saying that this is magic. I can't believe this is real. And I'm like, you know what? Let's not believe that it's real. Let's just watch, like you're saying, let's just watch and see yeah. how life gets to be and how life begins to unfold so differently. And yeah. how they get to come, like you're saying, they get to come into life just with things all in place, sans the trauma. So mm-hmm. yeah, really yeah. good.
I think it's hard to recognize how much some of those experiences have an impact on the smallest of things that we do, like mm-hmm. how present can we be with our kids?
Yeah.
You know, how afraid are we that they're not going to be okay, for example, or right. how much do we hold back from sharing with our friends or our spouse? And so in small ways, we see really big changes happening decently quickly once we start mm-hmm. processing.
I might kind of flag right now a later show with you at some point, talking about how traumas, big or small, whether it's the Aladdin movie or someone's, you know, spending the night at a, you know, friend's home when they're a young child, or the big traumas, if you will, the big T's, and how that looks in daily life and can subtly just be, well, maybe this person's just a cranky person. Maybe this person's just short tempered,
yes.
or maybe they just, you know, didn't have a good model in how to parent. No. Well, maybe yes, to some degree, but maybe no, maybe there's something else underneath, an undercurrent that's actually traumatic, that's really informing and causing and directing a lot of these interpersonal challenges in their person's life. That'd be a fun show.
That would be a fun show.
I'm just sure. looking down the road
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, sounds great.
Hey, I'd love to hear maybe of a story that might come to mind. Having worked with somebody who came in, just kind of in a nutshell, what they came in with and what you found yourselves doing. And then what was the outcome of the work with that person?
Yeah, one of my favorite stories, and I have so many that I could share, but one of my favorites is one of the earliest EMDR clients that I worked with, because I think it just sticks out in my mind because it was just the example of how powerful the therapy is. I had been working with a client. She was in her mid-40s, executive level, you know, very successful, very attractive woman who should have had a great, you know, self-concept of herself, but she had really high levels of anxiety to the point where she would feel like people were judging her or staring at her when she went into the grocery store or, you know, and thinking really mean things about her, like, oh, they think I'm ugly or I'm, you know, I'm stupid. Those kinds of things that just were such a mismatch for everything that life showed her. And she was in a relationship that really wasn't fulfilling for her. And she had been there in that relationship and kind of stuck in that life pattern for 5 or 6 years, had done some previous therapy, gotten some, you know, good skills, but the anxiety and the negative self-talk and the challenges with just being in relationship with others because of her own fears about being rejected, you know, they were just affecting every aspect of her life. Mm. And so I was pretty newly trained and I started talking to her about EMDR and I said, I think you're a really great candidate for it. Let's give it a shot. What do we have to lose kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And she was all for it. And so I knew her history pretty well by that time, but we kind of went back and just gathered through the, you know, the foundational theoretical model of EMDR through the adaptive information processing, went back, did history, identified those early childhood triggers through adolescence. She had a handful of them, kind of critical parenting stuff, some challenges with moving, nothing that would stand out as, oh, these are major, you know, traumas. They're just challenging adverse life events. And within about 4 sessions, the negative self-talk started going down. She was able to just be in her body more. She was able to be in public more. And then the funny thing is, we had to take a break for about 3 weeks because she had to go in for a surgery. And she came back and she was just feeling really good. She said, I went into the grocery store. I didn't even think about like being afraid to talk to the cashier. And for a moment she goes, I think it maybe was my surgery. And I just giggled, right? Because it how could it change so quickly in those 4 processing sessions that we had? And I was like, well, maybe, you know, we've been working on this. And then we continued and those things started getting better all across the board. And then she was strong enough to end the relationship that she was in that was really not working for her. And she started interviewing and in the end moved, got a job that was, you know, the next level. And so it was a great EMDR story, great early client for me. Yeah. I'll never forget that. But I think that's how people feel like, no, it must be, you know,
they know like you said,
the
else.
Stars, the moon aligned, it was the surgery. And then they go, oh no, it was the EMDR. I see.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, when you have something physically happen, a broken bone, you're wearing a cast. And so you can see it, you know, you've got a cut and then it begins to kind of heal and then it kind of scars and you kind of go, okay, that's the body healing. But we can't see the brain necessarily bringing all of these things together in a more integrated way and in a more desensitized way. So it is kind of subtle and nuanced. But when we get to see life being different, like you're describing, I get to go into my life differently and things are different, not other people, but me in it.
Yeah.
That is real. That's a great story.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And I could tell that story in different, you know, ways over and over again. And with the little kids who come in and they feel confident and they can do it. It's just great to see across the board.
That's really good. Yeah. Well, Wendy, we're beginning to kind of wind down today. You've given us such great information and given us this hope that there's an approach out there that we can incorporate into our work that can really be so beneficial and a tremendous adjunct to the work that we do with folks that come to see us. Give us some resources, both of your own practice and your work with EMDR and other EMDR resources for our listeners to follow up with.
Yeah. I think the best resource out there really is the EMDR International Association to find clinicians that are EMDR trained. Anyone can go on there and check out information, studies on EMDR, and even find a clinician across the country if they need to. So it's a great resource for clinicians as well. So I'm super happy to be a part of that organization. And I think, you know, trying to help spread the word of EMDR is kind of a passion.
For myself, I have a private practice, like you said, here, and that's just wendybird.com. And I also have a group practice where all of our clinicians are EMDR trained, and that's connectedhearttherapy.com. Oh. Yeah. So I really have a passion for helping clinicians know and learn EMDR and pass it on to
really good
many people as we can get.
Nice. Appreciate those. Yeah. You know, I know that EMDR is not a panacea. In other words, it's not a remedy for all ills, but it is a powerful, efficacious, effective adjunct to the context of talk therapy where these gains are integrated into a larger treatment plan, which include how the person now gets to be in the world without the trauma having to be there, carried around the same red-brained, lit-up brain way, and helps them develop more adaptive ways to interact with themselves and also with those around them. So I so appreciate you being with us today, laying this out for us, explaining it so very clearly, and helping people appreciate what can be available to them if they've gone through some of these things in life that leave them in this state. So thank you, Wendy, so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great to have you. Thank you so much. And to our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us today as well. And we appreciate you dropping in. And we will look forward to having you with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.